Why are Americans suddenly worried? Are consumer prices about to take a hard reversal and crash? And are speculators on the right or wrong side of the trade? Answer those questions and more on today's show, where we talk macroeconomic concepts, but we do not ever talk about calling ourselves a macro show again. That's right, we don't do that anymore. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. And some of you who know the backstory have been saying, I think lawyers take away all the fun. Oh no, my friends, I think we've only begun to start having fun with this, and at least for one day. The legal mechanisms behind the scenes have taken a back seat, so we'll hope they stay there. Anyways, we got to get into what's going on because we see a brewing crisis in America, and in two sides. We see geopolitically what's going on in Afghan, well, what happened with the markets. Now, this is not a political show, so we're going to focus on the market's interpretation of that. And then secondly, why are consumers suddenly worried? I mean, all of a sudden, their confidence in the economy is crashing. So from a geopolitical standpoint, let's kind of start there. What is going on with markets in the overnight, coming from Sunday now into today? What did we see? Markets fell. Because markets do not like uncertainty. They don't know where this is going any more than the rest of us do, and they're concerned about that. But what do markets really like? Passive flows, and that is what's driving the market. Some people keep asking, why do markets keep going up? Because of the over-concentration. We're not at extreme levels yet, but the levels of passive flows in this market from target date funds and people buying indexes is high relative to where it should be in a normal market, and that just puts a bid under stocks. Remember, all these strategies, they have a simple explanation. Give me money, I buy. And people, well, keep giving them money, so they keep buying. And that's why you see these dips get bought, when sometimes the news doesn't make a whole lot of sense of why stocks would rebound after the kind of political, or so said, should say geopolitical uncertainty going on in the markets in the world. Now, on to the bigger issue at hand is what's going on with American consumers, because on Friday we got the preliminary data from the University of Michigan, their consumer confidence survey, and it was shocking to say the least. We're seeing now consumers, their confidence is dropping to pandemic lows. But we're not it. Well, okay, sure, we're still in a pandemic, but not like it was back, you know, last year where everything was shut down. Things are still somewhat open. We're supposed to have 10 million jobs available. We're supposed to see people coming off their unemployment benefits and walking into the workforce and getting higher wages. That's what we're told. The data suggests that something is wrong, and this is the beginning of what you'll see as a potential next crisis, and I want to show this to you. So let's head into some articles and look at some charts here. And following, we're going to go to Zero Hedge. American consumer sentiment crashes below COVID crisis low. Inflation fears rebound. Following the University of Michigan sentiment slump in July, analysts expect a further modest slide in confidence in the preliminary data this morning, and they were very wrong. Sentiment crashed in early August, according to the University of Michigan survey, with a headline plunging from 81.2 to 70.0, that is weaker than the April 2020 COVID crisis lows. Now, you might be asking, why should I care about the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Survey? Well, you should, because the stock market has a very interesting relationship with it. And let me show you that. Now, for those of you who use the FRED database, in blue, we have the University of Michigan consumer sentiment data that does not have the preliminary data. So keep that in mind. We'll look at some other charts. And I've overlaid the Wilshire 5000. Now, I didn't do a year-over-year comp on it. Now, you could do that if you want. But I want to show you, as you can see, as consumer sentiment rises, well, so does the stock market. And when consumer sentiment falls, the stock market tends to lag it a little bit because it doesn't believe the consumer's right. And then it finds out, whoops, maybe it is. And in this case, we saw in the early 2000s, the market bottom, sentiment bottom. It went up, sentiment crashed, but not for long, came, started coming back up, and then woof, off the cliff into the financial crisis. Stocks said, oh, hey, we're late to that party. We're gonna head down. And then they both started rising together. And then going into, of course, the pandemic, we know both crashed, and the stock market has been massively front-running. Again, you could probably thank passive flows for this. Massively front-running consumer confidence, and now we're seeing a reversal in that. So let's take you to a more current chart, and here you can see the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index now below the lowest point in April 2020. And that signifies that there is something significantly wrong with the economy, because, you know, how do you want to think about this? This is pretty simple. When consumers are more confident, when you're more confident about the economy, what do you tend to do? Spend more money. And when you're not confident, what do you tend to do? Spend less money or significantly cut back, maybe even pay off debt instead of spending money. So you make those decisions, and that directly has an impact on future stock prices. So you look at corporate earnings. When people spend more, companies make more. When people spend less, they make less. And that is why you see the relationship between the University of Michigan's data and the market. But you'll want to notice that the University of Michigan's data tends to lead the market. Now let's go back to that article, because there's a ton of other great charts that came with this, and another piece that Zero Hedge put out. Worse still, consumer expectations. So what are expectations? Well, that's what you think about the economy going forward. So for example, if you think the economy is going to get better, and you think perhaps your wages or commissions or your opportunities are going to get better, what do people tend to do? Spend more money. They say, well, you know what? I've always wanted that nicer car, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a raise. So now I'll just go buy it now, knowing that in the future, I'm likely to get that raise and I'll have no problem affording the payment. I know some of you are saying, who thinks like that? Well, a lot of Americans, trust me, a lot of Americans do. All right, let's get into the rest of this. With just 32% of consumers thought the economy would improve, well below last month's 45% and 50% in June. So fewer consumers think the economy is going to get any better. That's a good reason. 7.5 million Americans on September 6th are going to lose all forms of income unless they have a job when they lose their unemployment benefits. And the rest of them on employment are going to lose that extra $300 a week. Now, over the past half century, the sentiment index has only recorded larger losses in six other surveys. So keep that in mind. Six other surveys, it was worse. All connected to sudden negative changes in the economy. Only larger declines in the sentiment index occurred during the economy shutdown in April 2020 and at the depths of the Great Recession. So what you're seeing is perhaps a leading indicator that things in the economy, from a macro perspective, are going to get a lot worse. Let's get into some more of those charts and see what we can find. Now, here you have the overall sentiment index in blue, and they're kind of hard to see between the red one. Red one is expectations, so what consumers think about the future, and that is at its pandemic lows. And you have current conditions, so how they feel today. So if I said, hey, how are you doing? And you respond, I'm doing fine, or I'm doing well, that's how you feel about the economy today. Now, it's not quite back at the pandemic lows, but you can see in this green line, it is heading lower. So what that tells you is very simply, there is something going on in the economy that the stock market doesn't see, but consumers are expecting. And that usually means, again, as we talked about, bad things for equity prices. How about inflation expectations? Now, if you want to have a good counter-cyclical indicator, ask consumers about inflation, because I can tell you it's largely based on what they pay at the gas pump. So when gas prices go up, they think inflation's going up. When it comes down, they think it's going down. But you can almost use this very loosely as a countercyclical indicator of where yields are going. So when consumers think inflation is going up a lot, they're usually completely wrong, and it heads lower, and that's telling you this is a one-year inflation expectations are expected to rise, and that's telling you it's likely to head lower, and that is, again, a bond bullish, yield bearish scenario. How about buying conditions? So, you know, perhaps now we can dig in and see, okay, what is driving perhaps this change in consumer sentiment that crashed lower. Well, consumers, according to University of Michigan in red, think home prices are way too high, and this is the worst time since the year 2000, and likely years before that, because this chart doesn't go back any further than that, to buy a home. And what does that mean for the housing market? Well, usually when people stop buying, prices tend to peak and go roll over. How about for durable goods? Think refrigerators, washers and dryers, things that you buy that are durable, last a long time. Buying conditions for those, worst since 2000 and likely longer. How about cars? Now, many people have said that the reason people aren't buying cars is there's no inventory. Well, consumers are saying car prices are too high, way too high, and that is the worst time to buy. So you start to get some idea here that consumers are feeling the effects of inflation, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, and they're saying, look, I can't afford that. Well, that's a topic I do want to get into, because I'm going to show you they can't afford these higher prices. And when they don't, that usually means prices come down. All right, let's keep on. And we've got one last chart on this. Again, another one from Zero Hedge. In a shorter picture, they show June of 2020 to now, and they show the increase in the University of Michigan Consumer Expectations Index, and they see how it crashed down. And the stock market keeps going up, but usually when this makes moves lower, as we've seen, that indicates that stock prices are indeed heading down. So, you know, the takeaway here is there's definitely a crisis brewing. Is there a geopolitical crisis? Maybe this won't be a big deal. Maybe there'll be something that shocks the markets. But internally in America, something isn't working. Something's rotten, and consumers know it. Is it simply just higher prices? Or perhaps there's something else? Well, the survey doesn't tell us that. But now let's dig into the economic data. Going back to last week, because I really want to get into this consumer price story, I'm going to show you why consumer prices are going to be rejected against the predominant view that, yes, they're going higher. And again, you make the decision. I'll let you decide. I'll just give you the data. You make the decisions. All right, we have the CPI index. This PPI. Wow, where is the CPI? All right, maybe that was on Wednesday that I meant to cover. Let's go back up. Well, whatever. It's CPI. Here it is, year over year. 5.3% flat over the prior month, also at 5.3%. And when we've seen that before, you know what? The CPI was on Wednesday. I actually tried to do a show from Brent Woods. For those of you who don't know, both my microphones failed. And so part of me thinks I actually did fully record it, only to find out it didn't work. But anyway, so you see that when you get these peaks where either the following month starts to flatten out, it tends to indicate a peak in the CPI. And we can see that throughout history and in different intervals. Now, how do we know consumer prices have a high probability of heading lower, because the consensus views are only going to go up? Well, there's a really simple way to do that, and that is look at the velocity of money. Now, velocity of money can be the number of times money is used in a transaction or exchange hands, depends on how you like to use it, to say it, and it, over a period of time. And so here we have the velocity of money on a quarter over a quarter basis. And many experts, as you remember, we talked about this, said velocity was only going to go up. And I said, probably not. And it came in flat. And it means it's likely to go lower due to its relationship with the Fed. And remember, we talked about QE trapping money into that dollar prison. Well, there you see it in the velocity of money. Now, I want you to look at carefully here the relationship between the velocity of money and the CPI, because you can get higher consumer prices in one of two ways. Do you know what they are? Well, one, you could just print money, which again, the Fed is not doing, but there are other central banks that have printed money, and that can create inflation. There's a second way, is you can increase the number of transactions money is used in. So if money can move very quickly between hands, you don't need a lot of money to create inflation. Now, the Fed can't print money, and velocity is slowing. So what is that telling you about the probabilities that inflation is sustainable? Well, they're pretty low. In fact, here we can see there was even a time in the 1990s when velocity of money was increasing and inflation really didn't hold. But notice since then, and I really want to focus on the post-QE world, because that is of most interest to me. And you can see here, starting in 2008 and 9, the velocity of money is slowing down. You'll notice that the CPI peaks up above it and then below it, but tends to fall lower. Every time it gets up, it says, nope, unsustainable. Why? Well, we're going to look at that soon. And here you can see consumer prices were rising, trying to rise, velocity was slowing, rolled over, head down, consumer prices crashed, prices way up, velocity saying, no, money's not moving fast enough to support you, hence, you're going to get rejected. Another way we know is if you strip out food and energy, which the Fed loves to do in the CPI. Now, why do they do it? Because, well, if you take out the two most volatile things, food and energy, well, then you set your policy around it, then you don't have to do as much. You don't have to tighten when you really want to keep easing. But here's the key about the core CPI. is 80% of it had a year-over-year rate of growth of 1. That means the other 20% was responsible for driving this thing up to 4.23% on a year-over-year basis. So it kind of tells you if inflation, as we learned from our friend Jeff Snyder, needs to be broad-based. It needs to be across lots of different components. And what we're finding out is 20% of the core is driving the entire move higher, 80% of it's at 1, which would put it down here even lower than it was during the pandemic. Now, so where does this all come down to? Well, the big question here is, can consumers afford higher prices? That's the in-store. Because if I go out shopping and there's certain things every month that I want to buy and their price goes up and my income doesn't go up as fast enough to purchase them, either I charge on my credit cards or I can't buy as much. If I can't buy as much, those prices get rejected. So we want to look at the relationship between wage growth and consumer prices and see if we can find something interesting. And you know what? We can. So what we've got here in blue is a consumer price index on a year-over-year basis. And on the right, the average hourly earnings of all employees. And I want you to go back here and look at the Great Financial Crisis. You see that inflation went up. Remember back then, everyone said the same thing they're saying now. Inflation is going up. And it came crashing down because look at the gap between consumer prices growth and wage growth. I mean, wages were growing at 3% a year. Consumer prices were up here at 5. Well, they couldn't afford it. Consumer prices get rejected. Then what happens? Inflation gets too low. Wage growth slows, but people now can afford stuff. So they buy it, shoots prices back up. But again, wage growth is still slowing. So it's down at a sub 2% here. And that brings downward pressure on price because still, again, they can't really afford it. Consumer prices shoot back up and wages grow a little bit at a little bit faster, a little over 2, but guess what? Not enough to sustain. Prices come back down and then they find some sort of equilibrium. Prices start to rise. Consumers say no. Prices come crashing down. And now prices are low enough that consumers say, hey, even though our wages aren't rising as fast as we'd like, we can certainly afford prices at these lower rates. And sure enough, boom, now consumer prices rise. Wage growth is static. Not growing much at about 2.5% a year, not keeping up with prices. Well, it is keeping up prices because they're growing at 2% a year now. So no problem. Higher prices get sustained until they get a little out of control. They come back down. And now what happens? Due to the pandemic, people's pockets get loaded full of stuff due to the government and stimulus. And we have earnings shoot up and prices go down. And boom, you have the reverse. And now what? You have wage growth at 4% a year, consumer price growth at 5.3%, meaning consumers can afford 1.3% less stuff. And well, that's significant in a big economy. So it tells you that these prices that we're seeing are going to get rejected. At least the probabilities are very high. Now, how about we take a look at speculators and see, are they on the right side or the wrong side of the market? Well, if I've got a story coming, perhaps on Wednesday, I don't think anyone understands what the Fed is doing, how they're manipulating the curve. I don't think anyone gets it. I put up the bear signal, and sure enough, moments later, my phone rang. Bear Lloyd, as you know, president of Real Vision, Travis Kimmel, called me and said, what do you got? I put it out to him, because he probably understands my thesis better than anyone. I said, let me know. And he's like, I think you've really got something here. And I think I do. So what happens on Wednesday, I'm going to explain to you what the Fed is doing and perhaps why there's a lot of people on the wrong side of the market. Some are right. Let's see if we can figure out who. Right side of the market, well, perhaps those were long tenure treasuries. At treasury notes in the futures market, my bet is these are mostly algorithm or type CTA type machines are starting to move long. But look at the long bond. I think these people are massively on the wrong side of the trade still, and they are still very short. I know not as short as they were, but still very short. The bond market yields have been falling as they've been holding their positions. How about crude? Now, if you listen to the recent interview on Real Vision with Tracy Shutart, she would tell you where crude prices are going to be bought at. And so far, she's been spot on. But speculators in the meantime have been backing off their longs. Are they going to be right? Are they sensing that perhaps what's going on in the consumer sentiment data, that there's something more there? How about the broad S&P, still slightly long on that? Euro futures, you know, everyone's still crazy bullish on gold, but the case for gold, if you look, you know, euros break lower, gold prices are going to go with it. And the euro, you see speculators are backing off their longs. you know, perhaps looking to get short at some point. And there's a nice line drawn here by Hajopia Shane that this is on a technical cliff ready to fall. And here you see gold on a similar cliff. People are still bullish on it, but you're seeing the speculators are backing off those positions, handing them gladly over to retail. NASDAQ slightly, I think, neutral, actually. And how about the Russell 2000? People say this is not a topping pattern. Well, when you have this many shorts, looks like it's a bottoming pattern. So we'll say a speculator is perhaps on the right side of the trade. If consumer sentiment is valid, and it usually is, well, it tells you the small caps would lead the market lower. And in that case, speculators are right. How about the dollar? Speculators moving long, looking to try to capitalize on a dollar breakout. Watch for over 94. And you've got, I think they're on the right side of the trade there, but they're short volatility. Well, when you understand what the Fed is about to do, or what the Fed has done, well, then you understand they're going to actually change. How do I put this in a way that makes sense? There's something that when yields fall, tightened financial conditions, or at least that's, it does, and that is a perception the market has. But if the Fed's mechanically doing it and the market doesn't know it, and you see consumer sentiment falling, well, now you got a perfect storm to say yields should be falling, but the Fed's going to drive them even lower. I'll show you how soon, hopefully on Wednesday. But anyways, thanks for likes, thanks for subscribes, thanks for being fans. As always, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here. Anyways, I'm Steve Van Meter. We'll see you on Wednesday. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information and is not intended to provide investment or other advice. Serials not to be construed as recognition or solicitation by our Social Security management instrument or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Business expressed in this video that do not reflect the Atlas Financial Advisors Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.